This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 293 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
So, any announcements? I kind of jumped the gun there, but I can't think of anything. They did confirm that season, or is this the last week announcement that season 5 filming started?
We started that last week, so they're still filming, so that's your announcement.
But the first image was released, official image of them in character, and everyone freaked out about what?
Wiggate. Oh, that's really hard to say. Say it.
Wiggate.
See, I'm trying to be like super
pronuncial. Specific.
Yeah. And I'm like, Wiggate. No. And you're like, Wiggate.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. Wiggate.
So, but yeah, everyone freaked out. Like, it's not that if someone says, oh my gosh, a better wig, I'd be like, huh? And I'll go back and look and say, oh, okay. I guess I kind of noticed that. I am never one who watched it and like complained about it.
No, but my opinion about quote unquote wig gate is that yes, their hair looks better. However, for the things to have occurred to make their hair look better, realistically, a lot of time has passed. So we'll see what that means. He had bangs, dude. You can't just make bangs go away overnight. One, and two, her hair is 6 inches longer.
Yeah, so we don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
I know. I'm not
how they explain it.
I have no specifics or any inside information. I'm just saying that from a realistic standpoint, to get them to post Wiggate hair, there has to be a time jump to realistically make it make sense. But, you know, whatevs. I'm just excited. I like that they're filming. That makes me happy. The 2019 FabFitFun Post Spring Editor's Box is on sale now. Treat yourself with items in it, such as Diff Cruise Aviator Sunglasses, Murad Renewing Eye Cream, and Etika Opal Rose Necklaces.
Do you love discovering new products? Are you a beauty and fashion maven constantly on the hunt for the next best thing? Ever read about or spot something online that you've always wanted to try but never have? Then you must try FabFitFun.
And with Mother's Day just around the corner, you can take the guesswork out of gift giving.
Forget flowers. FabFitFun is all you need to make this Mother's Day magical.
And with FabFitFun subscriptions, your mom can celebrate Mother's Day 4 times a year.
Now, I'm all about serums and skincare, and I'm loving the Tarte Rainforest of the Sea Drink of H2O Hydrating Boost.
And while you can customize your box by choosing some products and add-ons, I love the surprise of receiving my seasonal FabFitFun box with no customizations.
FabFitFun is a seasonal subscription box delivered 4 times a year with full-size beauty, fashion, home, fitness, and wellness products for just $49.99 a box.
And every box is guaranteed to have over $200 in retail value. The post-spring editor box came in at between $238 and $340.
Sign up for FabFitFun today. These boxes always sell out. Use our code OUTLANDER to get $10 off your first box.
Go to FabFitFun.com to sign up and start getting the box for a life well lived. Use promo code OUTLANDER and get $10 off your first box. That's over $200 for only $39.99.
Go to FabFitFun.com and use our code OUTLANDER to get $10 off your first FabFitFun box.
And now, on to our read-along. This week, we will be completing part one of The Fiery Cross read-along, starting with chapter 14, entitled Happy the Bride the Moon Shines Upon.
We're still at the last night of the gathering.
Oh my God, stop. It's almost over. We're so close.
Elizabeth K. writes, I don't have the same issues with the last day of the gathering as a lot of other readers do, possibly because it reminds me of camping events for the medieval combat reenactment I used to do.
Is that like ska?
SCA?
Yeah.
Ska. I never heard it called ska. I don't know. I think so, maybe. Because that's not just medieval combat reenactment, but that's that's like a whole, it's a whole world unto itself, but maybe.
Well, I had somebody I went to college with who called themselves Skadians. I just assumed that the singular of that would be ska. That's me, though.
Elizabeth K. continues, but for the majority of readers, does the moon shining mean the final day of the gathering might possibly be drawing to a close? Well, I think, honestly, for, I can't say majority, but for many readers, yes, only because we've read it before. That's the only reason we know, for sure. So the rain's held off. It's been, you know, kind of drippy droppy, getting chillier and...
Please, please, please define drippy droppy.
Rainy.
Like on and off. Sprinkling...
Anything.
Rain. Okay, drips, on drops. And off rain. Okay, on and off. I'll go with that.
So, but the rain is held off at least this part of the evening, and they're getting their Caldwell on. Jamie is not super happy his daughter won't be wed in a Catholic service, but he'll survive.
He's so cranky.
He's, oh, that's funny. So, and Roger might actually be super happy. Claire gets after Jamie to look more happy, and he appears so happy that he scares Duncan off. And Germain asks Claire who Caldwell is. Who's that man up there? And Jamie supplies a response, leaving Germain to think it's a bad priest. Jamie puts in that a Presbyterian is a heretic. So he's like, he's just piling it on. It's like, yeah, he's a heretic. So what does that mean, though? I mean, I know what the word means, but like he's giving, I know he's joking mostly, but
you can't say that stuff. You can't say that stuff to a kid.
That's what I mean. Because, and if it is a heretic, if he is a heretic, what does that say about his daughter getting married by a heretic? So it's really silly. And
here's the
so
thing.
Young.
I don't even care about the relationship to that and the fact that he's marrying his daughter. I'm more concerned about the fact that Germain, as you so named him, is an impressionable youth, which means he's taking everything that Jamie says at face value.
Oh, of course, kids are literal.
They are totally literal. So doing that to a kid is just hateful because he's going to embarrass
heck,
himself
though.
At some later time, I'm sure. It's fun now, but wait until he starts piping that up in an inappropriate situation. As a parent of a small child, she's not small anymore, but as a parent of a child who once
was small. Child.
Of a child who once was small. It's
well,
embarrassing
I don't know about once.
when they repeat you to other people in public.
Jamie's faces are so happy that Germain thinks he's making faces, which of course he is. But then Germain, like everyone starts to like add on the faces and just kind of get into a gig, almost some giggle fits. Elizabeth K. writes, my entire reason for choosing this chapter is the lineup of insanely grinning faces. Uh-huh. The first time I reread The Fiery Cross, I didn't remember a lot of little details from my first reading. I happened to come to this chapter while sitting in the waiting room of my local car dealership, waiting for my car to get an oil change. As much as I tried to suppress my laughter, by the time I got to Brianna turning and seeing the phalanx of grinning faces, it got the best of me, and I made a lovely snorting sound, snorting noise out loud. Out loud. So thank you, Diana, for helping me look like a loon in front of several complete strangers.
Let's be honest, though. The first time we were all reading The Fiery Cross, we were all wondering when it was going to be over.
Yeah. So. Elizabeth K. I figure it's good for my ego and helps keep me humble. I absolutely love picturing the look on Reverend Caldwell's face when he, quote, encountered the row of leering countenances. And I love his decision to forge ahead. Now, did you get any, like, throwbacks or?
I have never read Jamie as a sulky little bitch before. And this chapter, he was a sulky little bitch.
Oh, my gosh. That may have to be the chapter title. The chapter.
It should.
I like
sulky little bitch.
Well, unfortunately, we have four chapters and they're not very long. But there's a lot of things that happen. And I had another. I didn't write it down. But when we get to it in our discussion, it'll spark a memory and I'll say, oh, that's what I was thinking of for potential titles. But that's funny. Did you just say, is it whiny little bitch?
Sulky little bitch.
That's
he's not whining.
Funny.
He's sulking.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's hysterical. That's true. You know, we don't see him like that often, if ever.
Ever. He generally rolls with it, but tonight he's sulking like a little bitch.
Oh my goodness. So while this is not a beach wedding, it is another outdoor wedding with a fire, like a big fire, a big bonfire. Did this not, and I gave it kind of a clue there with the word beach, did this wedding not remind you of something?
No. I mean, we didn't really see much of the wedding. It was mostly Jamie being a sulky little bitch.
I know, but they're being outdoors, there being a fire. And it just reminded me, I had a flashback, that was the word, of Marcely and Fergus's wedding.
Oh, no, I didn't think of that at all.
With the priest who was like kind of cuckoo for Coco, literally.
The coconut priest?
Yes, the coconut priest.
I didn't think of that at all. Not till right now.
Not at all. So dang it, Diana, I got a tear prick when Claire sends up her prayers whenever she thinks of young Ian. That, because that came out of the blue, whenever she writes that or whatever, since we said goodbye to him, whenever that comes to my mind or to my eyeballs or my earballs, depending on how I'm listening or watching.
There are no balls in your ear.
Yes, but
anatomically.
It may have been Kevin Smith.
Anatomically.
He coined it. It's for podcast listeners. No. Yeah, it's earballs.
No. Anatomically, there are no balls in your ear. Anatomically, there are balls in your eye.
It's metaphoric. It's metaphoric.
I'm against your metaphoric.
Go. You can be that is completely your prerogative. So yeah, whenever I think, I don't think of young Ian often because he's not written about right now. But when he is, and
you think of him all the time, all the time.
What?
Not right now in this chapter, but you think of him often
in my life.
Uh huh.
Summer, you're a dork.
You had a lot to say about him at the end of the last season.
A lot. I didn't say I never think about him ever. I'm saying we're in book five. We've said goodbye because I'm reading book five right now. I don't think about Ian.
Well, you sent me a picture to my phone yesterday of the actor who plays young Ian with dogs.
Yeah.
And you were like, I wonder what dogs these are. And I'm like, those look like schnauzers. So
yeah, but I didn't think of Ian.
I feel like it's not a show picture.
Oh, I don't think it is a show picture because not at all. I just think he was out of, out of character. It was just like a, what do you call it? Not behind the scenes, but like just a snap. But no, my point is reading The Fiery Cross, I do not or have not thought much of young Ian in these 17 chapters yet. So I got a little tear prick when Claire sent up a prayer for young Ian. Now, Caldwell had offered to perform Jocasta and Duncan's wedding as well, but she refused, wanting to wait for a Catholic ceremony. But Duncan and Jocasta are being very tender to each other, and Fergus and Marcely are getting all swarmy. Even the bugs.
Swarmy? What is that?
Yes.
What is that?
A little, I don't know. Like.
I'm waiting.
Like, romantical and. Like loving, lovey-dovey, kind of. Even the bugs were getting a little bit swarmy. And Mr. Weems, even though his wife is long dead, was getting a little bit, like having memories and getting probably a little tear-pricky.
No, and that, to be honest, that is a true-to-life reaction to weddings.
Oh, heck to the yeah.
I don't think swarmy is the word I would ever use to describe it.
That's because you're summer.
That's true.
Or actually, sorry. That could be anybody. That's because you're not Ginger. It's not because you are Summer. It's because you're specifically not me. And I come up with silly words. That's all.
Sure. When you say swarmy, I'm thinking of shawarma, which is delicious.
Which I have heard of.
And I don't think of shawarma when I am at a wedding.
Well, so. I think the reason I didn't make it up. I mean, I may have made it up in English, but I think the reason I use it is because there's a German word that is schwärmerisch, I think. Which and I gotta look it up. I think it's along those lines.
You're fired.
Although maybe you're not allowed to
say that a German word describes anything if you can't describe what the German word means.
Hold on, I'll look it up.
Now, if you said schwul.
Oh, Summer, stop. Oh, okay. So this is actually. You'd probably hear this and go like, doesn't make sense. I kind of get it. I would continue to use it. So this is the German word schwärmerisch. It's either lyrical, enthusiastic, or quixotic, or quixotic, depending on how you Don
None
Quixote.
None of those things describe the feeling you were just trying to invoke.
I didn't say it was the German word. I'm saying it's my word, but it is connected to
Schmählisch. No, it is not connected because you're connecting Lyrical? It to a word that means nothing remotely close to what you are describing it to mean.
It totally does. People nah. who are in love, except, you know, Mr. Weems is, I mean, I guess you can be in
no,
love with
No, you just used words that meant crazy. Words
what?
That meant
quixotic. What's crazy?
Quixotic is like, is not a calm well, word.
I'm trying to tell you, those are
like
a
Don
lot of
Quixote.
Dictionary entries have more than one. Not every single one is going to okay. be just, a synonym
okay,
of the other.
Give me a synonym that describes the word you just pretended
I
it
just,
did.
Okay, first of all, I'll repeat myself. I did not say that it meant what the German word meant. I said the German word influenced my making up of this word. That's what I'm saying. But the German word, yeah, it has four.
You're
the
not
four
winning
meanings.
Any battles on your own behalf. You,
I'm not
give
trying
me
to
a
win
word,
any battle.
Give me a synonym word that describes the reason you used that particular word to be
I've
the
told
word
you
created.
Where I believe I came up with it or was influenced by. I didn't say it meant the same thing as the word I was influenced by. We need to go on.
Oh, good Lord. Okay, go.
The chapter ends with Jamie and Claire looking into each other's eyes on the lines or in during the vow part of as long as we both shall live.
Even
very,
if,
very romantic.
Even if we get together with other people in the interim. And then find each other again, as long
or
as we
are
both
torn
shall
apart,
live.
Or sleep with kings.
They were
and
not
have
torn
babies
apart.
With other. What,
they were
the
not
stones?
Torn apart. They were not torn
shoved apart,
apart ever.
They were shoved
he,
apart.
He pushed her. Torn.
She
implies,
was shoved.
Torn implies that it was beyond either of their controls, and it was not at any time. The only two people in the first three books who were torn apart. Would be Frank That's and Claire.
Frank and Claire. Okay. So Elizabeth Kay writes, there's something very lovely and peaceful about this chapter. For a little while, everyone is happy. There is no major trauma occurring and the family can just enjoy being together. There's even a brief mention of young Ian, whom I very much miss now that he is with the Mohawk.
I don't think they're all enjoying this though, because Jamie's being a little bitch.
He is. Well, in the beginning, before definitely, maybe in the beginning, but at the end, he was all swarmy with Claire. That's the title, swarmy.
No, it's swarmy. Not.
No,
I want sulky little bitch. That is the title.
Hold on. I have a compromise. Swarmy little bitch.
Swarmy little bitch? No, he's not swarmy. He's not. He's sulky.
Just wait till you look up and see what I call the episode.
I hate you.
Don't hate me. Okay, I promise
I
you will not use
know.
Swarmy.
I want everyone to know that if it's not titled, swarmy. If it is not Mm-mm. titled Sulky Little Bitch, I clearly have no role in this podcast outside of just being your co-host. And I know you're going to cut all of that out, but that's the truth. I get no input. You're going to cut that out.
Damn straight, because now who's being a whiny little sulky little bitch?
I'm not whining. I'm sulking for show.
Okay, exactly. You're sulky little bitch. Okay,
I'll be the sulky little bitch that is the title reason.
There's something magical and hopeful about weddings, Elizabeth continues, whether in a cathedral or around a campfire. I think it holds very true to life that the couples are all remembering their own weddings, and Lizzie is imagining what it will be like to have that magical day herself. I'm extremely recently engaged, and this chapter actually made me a little misty, which is pretty unusual. I'm usually more on the robot side with Shimmer, but this Welcome. Scene definitely caused a tear prick or two. Sorry, right. Summer, I couldn't help myself.
No, you can't. It's what you got to do. I'm just going to say that the first wedding I went to post my divorce was brutal AF. And I'll tell you why it was brutal AF is because not only was it a wedding and I was clearly in a place where I was not prepared to be at a wedding, their first dance song was my first dance song. The father-daughter dance was the exact same father-daughter dance from my wedding. I excused myself and wept in the bathroom.
Yeah, and I was going to go after you. Terry went after you, I think, later on. Our cousin went after you. It was our cousin's wedding, right?
I didn't even, it was our cousin, but not that cousin. And I was just like, weddings are a lie. Wah! I'm crying and I need to go be alone. And it wasn't anything about them. It was that I needed to go away so that I didn't ruin their moment, because my moment was very personal and I needed to take it away to not affect them.
Oh, I hear you. I respect that. I respect you for what you needed. And also I respect you even more. Not that I would have not respected you if you hadn't, if you had stayed. But number one, you deserve to have privacy for a moment that you want to have alone. And I respect you for in both ways, that and also because you, you know, and again, not that like it was family, right? So family would have supported you, did support you, but I totally get that you wanted to like remove yourself.
Think of how much more awkward it would have been. I left the room to not make a scene, but if I'd stayed, that would have been awful.
That would have been, that would have been a little interesting.
Oh my God. So I was the woman who slowly walked out of the room, found a stall, and then wept.
In that case, Summer wasn't being a sulky little bitch. She was actually truly wounded. She was truly wounded.
Look, it was hard enough being at a wedding after I was just going through a divorce. Like the divorce was just, it was fresh and I was working through it. And to have them have picked the exact same father-daughter dance song was just, it was rough. It was a lot.
Martina P. writes, after a very, very long day, Roger and Brianna are finally wed. Wait, say that again. How many chapters was this
long day?
Exactly. It was 13 chapters.
No. It started in the last book, my friend.
Oh, shut up. Yeah, okay. Correct. Diana just loves to write humorous wedding stories. It instantly reminded me of the funny scenes during Marsley's and Fergus's wedding on the island with Stone Father Vogden. And I promise you, I do not read the comments before I make my notes. So I'm so happy that I wasn't the only one who had that thought. She continues, I really had to laugh out loud visualizing Jamie's jack-o'-lantern grinning and adorable little Germain with his funny observations. It is more than obvious that Jamie is utterly displeased with the Presbyterian wedding ceremony.
Sulky little bitch.
He has such a hard time, as probably even today a devout Catholic father would. Claire had to make sure he was behaving himself. My devout Catholic father-in-law had to sit through a Protestant wedding in a Protestant church in Germany. He even made a small comment that he thought it might not be altogether legal.
Bah.
I know. He still, that's like awesome. Jamie, had to get over it and even managed to greatly enjoy himself during the festivities that ensued. He might have been also distracted to figure out the differences between German and American weddings.
I want to go to an American-German wedding. I think it sounds fun.
I agree. I think going to weddings of any other culture is a beautiful experience, I think. And it's also an honor to be, you know, among those who are different and be allowed into that space, but also and help celebrate people's that special day. But also just to observe and just as a not a people watcher, but as a human who is just really interested in other humans and other cultures, I think it is. I agree. It's fascinating. It would be fascinating. Claire tells Jamie in that it is a perfectly Christian ceremony, and Jamie seems to calm down a bit. I love Claire's observations about Brianna and Roger being a beautiful couple, and the reference she makes to the quote, same echo of bone and flesh in Jocasta, tall and handsome, comparing her to Brianna.
And Jocasta clearly stated, I'm not getting married by your Protestant priest. I will wait.
It touched me that Claire said a little prayer to Ian, as she often does when she thinks about him. She also observes a tenderness between Jocasta and Duncan and is convinced it will be a marriage based on esteem. Martina continues, I love the reference of the wedding rings, the silver for Jamie, the gold for Frank, as if it symbolized his presence on that day. A wedding always instills certain emotions among the guests, and it is no different in this chapter. We see sweet feelings between Marsley and Fergus, Mr. and Mrs. Bug, and even Mr. Weems, and very powerful emotions between Jamie and Claire. Such a wonderful ending to this chapter.
Side note, I would like to know.
Uh-oh.
Tell me one religion, not of your own, that you would like to witness a wedding at. And I have one that I would love to go to, but I would like to know what you would like.
Well, two. One would probably be a Hindu wedding.
Yes. Yes. I want to go to a Bollywood wedding. Ugh, I want it so bad. The wedding that goes on for like a week. I want it.
Oh, gosh. I couldn't do a week, but I could do a long day.
And all the Lord. Red and the Mendy and the henna. And I want all of it. I not only want to go to it, I want to be a part of it.
Oh, gosh. She wants to be a performer now, people.
And I don't know any. No, not a performer.
As long as you teach her the stuff, she'll do it for free.
I will, because I want the experience. That's it. I just think that would be so much fun. Anything else? I've been to a Jewish wedding. I've been to.
Oh, I have.
I've been to my own wedding, which was attempted to be non-denominational, and then it didn't happen. It was an attempt. It was foiled by my lovely aunt, who brought Jesus really to the forefront, which made us giggle. Well,
Jesus would have been there no matter what. But I understand what you're saying.
I didn't invite him.
No, but I understand. Let's go to the next chapter.
Okay. We're moving on to chapter 15, entitled The Flames of Declaration.
Following the wedding, all in attendance enjoyed a lavish spread donated by Jocasta. Dancing, drinking, you know, orgies. I mean,
there were no orgies. Watch your face.
Hold on a second. I mean, come on. Quote, dancing to the music of the fiddle and mouth organ, unquote.
That's not
everyone
an orgy.
Everyone knows what that means.
No, not orgy. Yes. Maybe an organy.
No, a mouth organ. People putting mouth on organs? Come on.
No, it's not blowjobs. Don't make it like that. Nobody does that in public.
In Rome, I'm sure they did.
Not today.
And this is not a Catholic wedding. You know those Presbyterians.
It's all about the blowjobs in public.
Oh,
that's
my God.
Right.
I can't believe you, Holy.
Oh, my God. You started it. I was just bringing it home.
For the ride.
You
finished it really well.
I'm a good finisher. Neck down, please.
My
neck
plosives
down.
Are all over this episode. Oh, Lord. Claire felt bar. Roger.
Claire felt what? Bar? What does that mean?
You're going to make me pee my pants, dumbass.
Just explain to me what Claire felt bar means, because I don't think that's a thing.
It is a thing. It's capital B, capital A, capital R.
Okay. Bored as.
No.
Bored as
no,
what?
It is shorthand. In
for?
By veterinarians. That means
meaning?
Bright, alert, responsive.
No. No one would ever say that. You're fired. You're not allowed to describe anything ever again.
Okay, you're writing the notes next time.
I'll do my best. It's going to be lots of curse words.
We need to have an episode where you like hold down the fort and I. Well, we need to have like an opposite day where.
Oh my God.
It would be so fun.
I get to choose the chapter and it will be short.
You totally.
And it will be about nothing important.
That is fine. You can totally do that.
I should have chosen the last one because it was all about Jamie being a whiny little bitch.
That's funny.
I was ready for that one.
And you can, now that we put it out there, you can let me know when you want. We don't have to plan it. You can just tell me, this is what I'm taking. And whatever one you choose.
Oh my God. Are you prepared? Are you prepared to be me?
Yeah. Do you know what that, because you know what I'm going to do? I'm
That's
only going to listen.
Thing. Are you ready?
I'm not going to read. I'm only going to listen.
Do you know
You're
how?
You're going to have to go. I'm going to have. Shut the fuck up. You're going to have to. I will
you
send
just
you the
said
comments.
Fruck.
Yes, I did. I'm going to have to send you the comments so you can put them in where you think they belong. But I'll send you all the ones. I'll do that for you. But you have to do the script. I don't have to see it.
That will be the episode that everyone goes, oh, it was so bad. I miss Snarky Summer.
No, you know what happened? If Snarky Summer like hits it out of the park, they're going to demand more.
You shut your mouth. I'm not doing it. I'm not going to
do
it.
Just do one.
I'll do one.
Just for funsies.
I will look through the book and figure out when I'm comfortable.
Or just as we're reading. Well, that's true because you have to know a little bit ahead of time. But okay.
Move on.
Claire felt bar.
Mm-mm.
Rogers,
why are you doubling Rogers, down?
Oh
on
my God!
Already said
okay,
it's not
I just realized. I just realized. Listen, Claire felt bar. Rogers
Stop
playing
saying
a guitar.
That.
Let me get it. The
you know,
words out of my
Dr.
mouth.
Don't Dr. Seuss me. Don't Dr. Seuss me. I know what you were saying.
Rogers playing a guitar.
You're fired.
Ulysses brings her a brandy, and she's decidedly a little less bar.
No. Ulysses brings her a brandy, and he traveled from afar.
I'm not even trying to rhyme. I'm just trying to, whatever.
Lies.
Summer. I never was to try to rhyme. I don't think Jamie understands the father-daughter dance. He pulls Claire onto the dance floor, and Roger brings Bree.
Pretty sure father-daughter dances were not Catholic.
Except that it wasn't a dance. It was the calling of the clans. I totally left it in there. My oopsie. That was funny. When it's the Fraser's turn, Jimmy stands up and pays homage to those left in Scotland and those lost. Quote, raise a glass. Or raise a glass. There's a lot of ways to do that. I'm not going
to
say it.
Raise a glass to freedom.
Yes.
Something they can never take away, no matter what they tell you. I'm done. Sorry.
Yes. And he also pays tribute to their women. He calls Claire and Roger to him. And he names them. Okay,
I thought for a second you were like, he pays tribute to his women. He calls Claire and Roger.
Roger. I was like, oh, brutal.
Summer.
That's a hateful father-in-law thing. He names them and says to him, to Roger, stand by me in battle, be a shield for my family and for yours, son of my house. Aww. That was pretty deep there.
He's accepted.
Sarah S. writes, I love that despite prejudice of the time regarding women, Jamie makes a point to single out the women and their importance in strength and also that they are the vessel that carries the families for future generations. I think Claire, being such a strong-willed woman as well as Bree, has given him a slightly modern view of the women in his life and their ability to shape things around them. I don't disagree, but before Claire came around, there was Jenny and there was his mama. And there was his aunt. So Jamie has grown up around very strong women. I'm sure that Claire and later Brianna definitely didn't, you know, put any kind of kibosh on that. Probably brought it out more. But I think before he met Claire, because if he were not the way he was before he met Claire, he would have been a lot more stern or firm with her from day one. So he already had a lot of those attributes. Then Jamie calls his tenants and he picks up a branch and he throws it into the fire and he says, Frasers of the Ridge are here.
And he starts the whole gathering thing. He had a whole like Highland gathering thing. Not just the gathering where they call the clans. It was reminiscent of.
Yeah, he already talked about people who they left and people who they lost from Scotland.
No, not that.
And I'm how they were in the new world.
Okay. No. I'm saying that it was reminiscent to the concert goers. That's not the word. To the gathering people of the Highland oath ceremonies that they had. Like when Colum gave, when he called everyone out and everyone gave their clan oaths to say, you know, we're here, we pledge to be part of this. Do you know what I'm talking about? Am I making this up? That's how I listened because I didn't read it.
No, that was in there. That was earlier. That was before the Freighters of the Ridge part, I think. Sarah S. writes, Jamie in front of the massive bonfire commanding the attention of men and families of the Ridge has to be a great happiness for him, fulfilling his birthright as Laird, even in a new country. I feel it's also a great comfort to the men who would know the practice, but not being in their home country, thinking they'd never see it again. Especially Mr. Weems. He's the sweetest, and it makes my heart happy for him. Now, Claire mentioned seeing ghosts of those not with them, both those who have died or those in a different place. And I can't help but see Myrta and both Ian and young Ian standing at Jamie's side.
God bless her. Myrta's marrying Jocasta.
Oh, Summer. Now, when I read this just now, you want to know what made me think of? Les Mis.
Why?
Because everybody dies and comes back at the end as ghosts. Standing next to.
That's not the only show that everyone dies at.
No, but it is the only one that people are on stage and everybody comes back in the finale for the number and they're all wearing like, or not wearing, but they're like under white lights or whatever. Seraph writes, tear prick alert. Jamie reaches his hand to Roger and calls him son of my house.
Durr.
So as they walk back to their camp, Claire tells Roger, congrats, son of the house. And he calls her mum. That made me laugh. He tells Claire what she'd missed. So Claire was paying attention, but as she was looking across to the, or looking at the people, she looked at Bree, and Bree was holding Jemmy, and she was taking Jemmy's hand and like waving with his hand. And so Claire was, you know, looking at her daughter and looking at Jemmy, and then her attention came back to the words Jamie was saying. So she had missed just a little bit of the context or a little bit of the words in Gaelic that he had said toward the end. And so Roger tells Claire what she'd missed. Jamie had sworn an oath pledging protection of a sort, but it wasn't just like, I promise to do this. It was a very strong promise, a promise that must be kept no matter what the cost. And the way he translated it was a little eerie and very, very serious. Sarah S. concludes or brings our chapter discussion to a close with, as the chapter ends, Roger is reflecting with Claire. I realize as big of a deal as it is for Jamie and Claire to have Roger become part of the family, I think it's equally as important to him to again have parental figures in his life. He lost his parents so young and lost Reverend Wakefield. So I think this is a wonderful moment as they truly become a family. The perfect wedding gift. As their conversation comes to an end, Claire asks what Yarsach means. This explanation perfectly sums up Jamie. An oath to protect and support the families of the Ridge, a word of honor. That is our Jamie to a T. He also explains it was said to be distinguishing characteristic of the McCrimmons of Skye, meaning that once their word is given, it must be acted upon no matter the cost. If a McCrimmon said he would do something, he would do it, though he should burn to death in the doing. Is this a foreshadowing of the article that Bree and Roger found about Jamie and Claire dying in a house fire? When I Googled, and then Sarah ends with, when I Googled Yarsach, I got these words as a translation. Reliability, trustful, and trusting.
Moving on to chapter 16, entitled, On the Night That Our Wedding Is On Us. As opposed to under us, or next to us, or with
or
us.
In us.
It's on us. Don't make it nerdy. That's dirty.
On this, their second wedding night, Brianna asks Roger to sing for her. His answer, I'll always sing for you, Hen, no matter what, no matter where.
His answer should be, bitch, I don't want to sing to you. I want to do you. That's the appropriate answer on our wedding night.
No matter whether you're there to hear or not, I'll always sing for you, unquote. And then there's Summer's answer.
Exactly. I'm not wrong. Now,
it was still a cool night, and now the rain had begun, the light rain. For the first time.
Could you imagine? Seriously, could you imagine on your wedding night and you're just like, yeah, let's go to town. And your significant other is like, oh, no, 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 no. Sing to me. And you're like, really? Right now? Right now? We can sing for the rest of our lives. I mean, he can't because I've read the rest of the book. But most people, you have your entire lives to do that. Tonight is all about the doing it. That's what it should be about.
Speak of doing it. Speaking of doing
it. Tell me about doing it.
Roger and Bree doing it. It was a cool night and it was raining, but their first time, their first wedding-ish, had been hot and they had been in a shed. Now it was autumn in a tent, surrounded by people they loved.
On the show, that was not a shed. That was the biggest shed I've ever seen, with the most largest fireplace in a shed I've ever seen.
And blow-up beds, correct. Blow-up mattresses.
Whatever that was, yes.
So their first time, now it's autumn, it's in a tent, they're surrounded by people they love, and I don't mean that in a creepy way. Diana does a beautiful job of comparing and contrasting the weather, the scents, as in like the smells, the feelings, looks,
the taste,
and that of these two nights.
No one should ever taste a wedding night. We should let that go.
So Brie is needing to get rid of her milk. She's like, sorry, honey. We'll do it in a second. So what does he do as she goes in? I mean, this I get because he's like, I mean, I guess
he already did that.
I guess he can fluff, but he, while she's doing her milk or expressing her milk, he grabs a guitar.
Can we talk about how you decided to just explain that?
Explain what? Grab a guitar?
No, no, no. Doing her milk. That's not what happened. You just said doing her milk, and that's not what happened.
And I followed up with expressing.
I hope that one day you get to experience what that's like.
What does that have to do with anything?
Because expressing or doing her milk is not indicative of what it's really like.
She has to take care of her engorged breasts because Jamie's not going to help her because Jamie is not there.
Oh, I hope Jamie doesn't help her.
That's why I laughed. Jamie's not there, and rightly so, because they need their time. And so, but the trade-off was she had to take care of this. So she expressed, when I think about my breasts, I express myself. No, she has to express the milk. That's what she has to do. So he grabs a guitar, you know, to sing while she's doing this. So he sings.
Does he have a song that calls the milk?
No. Is that a thing? That would be funny.
They have songs for everything, don't they?
They do. I think it's in the Gaelic. Yeah, he sings in Gaelic, and the translation roughly is, on the night that our wedding is on us, I will come leaping to thee with gifts. On the night that our wedding is on us, you will get 100 silver salmon, 100 badger.
I wanted it to be something that rhymed with gift. I was going with prick. And I was also hoping that it would be something way more milk expressive.
Naughty? No, oh.
Milk expressive. I think there should be a song. There's a song for the rats in a freaking garage. You can't come up with a song for like mothers who are trying to express their milk.
Apparently he's not that creative right now. He's got a one-track mind.
Boo, Roger.
He's thinking of how he'd once been where Jemmy now suckled. But so he'd fiddled. Oh, sorry.
Whoa. See, okay. So, you know, that was real loud.
I know. I'm telling you, it's the damn finger. I talk with my freaking hands.
Put your finger in your pocket and stop waving it around willy-nilly. It is clearly a problem.
It is now on the cat tree. So I will speak.
On the cat tree? That's not where it belongs. Put it in your pocket, yes, you nerd.
Summer, the cat tree is next to me. I pull it up so the cats will be close to me when I'm bored.
What are your cats doing?
They're not on the cat tree. It's just me.
Okay.
It's a ginger tree, podcaster tree. So, but I'm saying it's somewhere that's about elbow height that I can rest my hand and I don't have to like tilt sideways. So he's thinking of how he had once been all up in that area. So when they first, when they were hand fast on their first wedding night, they explored each other's bodies top to bottom, inside out, back and forth, left and right, kitty corner, catty corner, diagonal, whatever. Okay. And the boobies were part of the deal. But ever since they had reunited, since Jemmy's birth, he didn't push things, but ever since they were reunited after Demi's birth, she'd never really wanted him to do much in that area. And the thought pops in his head, and he's not pushing her about it. And the thought pops in his head, you know, oh my God, I wonder if it was something that Bonnet had done that made her like extra sensitive about this, about that area, or about, you know, doing something, being there. And he's like, he kicks Bonnet out of their marriage bed. Mentally, and he switches to English and he starts playing the Beatles song Yesterday. And then they knock boots. And she enjoys it, but it's a very interesting kind of description. She enjoys it, but she still feels distant. And
doesn't she pleasure herself afterwards?
Did she?
I totally missed it.
If she did, I missed it.
I thought I recalled her speaking of him sleeping and her taking care of business on her own. Hang on. Hold on.
I could be wrong.
She lay quiet in the dark, feeling the thunder of her heart boom slowly in her ears. The throb of it echoed in the pulse of her neck, her wrists, her breasts, her womb. She had lost track of her boundaries. Slowly, the sense of limbs and digits, head and trunk of space occupied returned. She moved the single finger glued between her legs and felt the last of the tingling shocks run down her thighs as it slid free. His breaths came in long, regular exhalations. Thank God he hadn't wakened. It's after the whale penis.
What?
That little bloop bloop.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. I use a Kindle, so that wouldn't be there anyway. I mean, it might be there, but it may not be the right. Well, no, it would still be a marker at the same part in the text.
I'm just saying. They did what they did together, and then she took care of herself alone.
Okay, so her diddling herself actually now makes the rest of the chapter make more sense. Because she feels close to him when they make love, but she feels, or at least the words she's saying that I read and I took notes on and was thinking about was, she feels that for the longest time, again, maybe, probably, I'm guessing, since they were reunited, that there's something in her emotionally and not so much physically, but emotionally that's affecting her physically. But there's something that she's kind of keeping back. And she doesn't think at this point that it's on purpose. Because she wants to be completely open to him, and she wants there to be that give and take, but she recognizes in herself that it is not happening at the moment. And so it makes sense that she might, you know, pleasure herself afterwards, because not only is she kind of keeping something back, a part of herself back, she also says that, and she thought it might be related. She also says that she almost got more pleasure from seeing him lose himself. And so if that's what it is, that kind of puts the rest of the chapter or the rest of the what happens after he falls asleep kind of make a little more sense, you know?
Hmm.
So she thinks when she's lying there after whatever happens, she's hearing the sounds of the night, the smells of the night, thinking of the canvas and the tent. And she has a memory of Frank and their camping trips together. And that's triggered by the smell of the wet canvas. So I thought that was very interesting. Diana just mentioned it, did not go into detail. We never actually get a lot of detail. We just get it in passing, like a little blurb here, like, oh yeah, my dad taught me to shoot. Oh yeah, my dad taught me to hunt, or whatever it was, right? We never get like a really extended description of anything anywhere. But here's another little pop-up. So they spent time camping, and that is a sweet little gem. It's filling in more of that time. When Claire was back with Frank and they were raising Brianna. Megan P. writes, I mean, wow. Diana sure knows how to set the mood. Nothing makes me feel so romantic as, quote, pine and Jupiter. Jupiter? Man. Pine and juniper, spiced with the smoke of smoldering fires and the faint, sweet note of baby shit. Unquote. I also am left wondering, what exactly is erotic about the sound of a woman expressing her breast milk into a chalice? To each their own, I guess. I thought that too, Megan, but I mean,
maybe he also likes the sound of somebody peeing into a chalice.
Oh,
I mean,
there you go.
It's all the same sound, right? Liquid into a vessel?
Yes, but definitely different water pressure, different pressure strengths.
You don't know how strong the pressure of breast milk can be. I mean, according to Diana Gabaldon, it shoots out.
No, it does, absolutely. It's very high pressure, but it's a very little bit of, comparatively, it's a very small amount of liquid that's coming out. Probably under higher pressure than urine. I think it depends on how full your bladder is, because I've had times where I've had to go so badly that I sit down and it's like, bah! And I'm like, holy doodle. There's no pushing. It just comes out and it's like, let me just step back and let you do that. You know what I mean? Because dang. So it might be higher pressure, but I think it's a different sound, definitely, because a dude peeing into the same chalice, the same vessel.
Dudes pee wherever they want.
Exactly. But I think a dude peeing into a vessel would be a lot louder because it's just, it's a bigger amount, even if it's not as high of pressure. And it's going to be deeper because something that is a thinner stream and less of it, it's going to be a much higher pitch than a lot of it.
Stop. You're hurting me. Move forward, please. Move forward.
This chapter was kind of unexpected from start to finish. I find it strange that Roger doesn't notice her lack of orgasm in the moment. I mean, is she faking it only to take care of herself later? Or maybe she needs a double release. I'm also wondering if she isn't able to get off in the moment due to just the change in her body with nursing or because of the old trauma. This scene is a complete departure from any other lovemaking scenes that Diana has ever written. She's always oversharing with the smells, but why highlight this? To show realism, hold on, to show realism between a nursing mom and spouse? But also, if she isn't faking it, Roger needs to pull his head out of his arse. I'm left confused after this chapter.
He needs to pull his head out of her puss and put his face down there and bring her to the moment.
Oh, there you go. Megan P. finishes with, looking forward to what you guys have to say about it. That's and by that, she it. Means summer, because Ginger doesn't talk a lot about a lot of stuff like that. But, I mean, okay.
I would like to hear you say more about it. Go ahead. Tell me, Ginger.
No, I've given my two cents.
Okay. I'm just saying.
Because apparently I didn't even catch that she was having one off. Or rubbing one out.
Because you're, I mean, is that an indication of how you expect
things to be? No, I have no comment. No, I don't think they're all like that.
Okay. I mean, I don't know what your personal experience has been. I'm just saying. To chapter 17, Entired. Entired.
It's oh, tired.
Lord. I'm tired. Tired.
Too. I'm tired. She tired. We tired.
We all tired. All right. Entitled Watchfire.
Leanne F. writes, the definition of a watchfire, quote, a fire kept burning at night as a signal or for the use of those staying awake to watch or guard, unquote. And she says, this is the nighttime of the longest day ever.
It was bound to happen eventually, but good Lord.
Jamie and Claire in their tent. He's not sleeping, but he has a view of the watchfire and the tent in front of it.
He's still sulking.
Oh, Lord, maybe a little bit. He sees people going to speak with Hayes in the dark. Quote, sentiment lay strong against the rioters. It was not held as a betrayal of friends, but rather the necessary giving up of criminals for the protection of those who chose to live by the law, unquote. This is a very difficult, we can have a little chat about this, it's such a short chapter, I have very few notes, but it's a very, man, the times were so, it's a touchy subject. I get where Jamie's coming from, I really do. Jamie tells Claire that he thinks the rioters were wrong. But he can see himself in general, maybe just not in that instance, as part of a mob, given the right circumstances. And then I wrote, even before they went into it, think about battle, right? It may have a plan, like, you know, before Culloden, they'd already fought battles. They knew that this next battle was coming up and hopefully the next battle up until they hopefully won. But when you go into a battle, even if you know what, you know, that there's a battle coming tomorrow morning or whatever. Even though it's unlike a riot, typically, riots usually aren't planned. Riots happen kind of because of the mob mentality, and people, it kind of overtakes the mob or overtakes, you know, people are following and going along with a group or with a mob. Definitely because there's always a cause. I'm not saying it just like it's a rando occurrence. It's usually, it can be because of something political. It can be because of yeah, there can be a lot of different causes. And that was actually an example that Diana wrote about, being in battle and thinking that even if you fell, that those, your comrades and your family members and your men at arms would be, you would be carried at least in spirit by them as they continued after you fell. So he continues that the rioters were responding to the actions of men, not the actions of government. And Claire says, well, while he might be correct, she says, it's just a matter of time. It soon will be responding. There soon will be rioters and mobs responding to actions of the government, not actions of men. And he says, yeah, but not this day. But the men, he looks out, there are still men, you know, going to the tent. People are still going to talk to Hayes. And Jamie says that the men who are turning in their acquaintances are wrong too. So do you have any thoughts on, because Jamie's, someone could say that Jamie's kind of writing both sides, but I truly see what he's saying or what Diana has written. There's a difference between acting as part of a mob, responding to actions of men versus responding to actions of government. So thinking of battle, things he has been part of, that would be responding to actions of, now government may be led by one man, but it, the government, the man rules, you know, the country or the realm, that is still, he's the top of the government. It's still a government that is acting against people or towards certain citizens or towards certain humans, rather than a single person or a small group of people. But then he also says that the rioters were wrong, but also those who were turning in the rioters were wrong. I thought it was astute of Jamie. I mean, he's usually astute, but what did you think about that?
There's no right side to that, right?
Mm, yeah.
So you have to understand that even the soldiers on the side of the quote unquote government are only doing what they think is right. And I mean, and that's the hard thing to say about any battle, any war, any riot, any mob, anything, any kind of strife that happens, is that both sides feel completely justified in the actions that they take part in. Either they feel justified in it, and maybe they don't feel justified in it, but if they feel justified in them based upon purely the fact that they have to follow orders to feed their families, or they feel honor bound to follow orders, the orders of somebody who is far and away above them, who is following orders from somebody who's not there, or is following orders from somebody who has a larger picture of whatever that happens to be. So there's a lot that happens. And I mean, you think about it, there's a lot of, you know, that's modern soldiers do the same thing.
Oh, heck yeah.
For the reasons that they feel obligated to continue following the whatever that's in charge. I don't know. I don't have the word. I'm sure it'll come to me later. But there's also the obligation of the soldier to have his own sense of duty and his own sense of honor. So it depends a lot on what oaths and what promises the soldiers in question or the townspeople in question have decided to base their beliefs on. Because there's a lot, I know soldiers who base a lot of their personal beliefs on oaths that they've made to uphold the Constitution of the United States. Not to follow a rando general into battle for whatever reason he decides is fair and honest and truth, but to uphold, you know, to the letter, the Constitution of the United States. People who have read it, who understand it. I would never purport or promise to know all of the ins and outs of constitutional law. I've never even read the whole thing. I'm going to put that out there. I'm not ashamed to say I haven't read it. I should be, and I should read it because I feel undereducated in that regard. So I always feel like people who have read it and do know it are way more equipped to have conversations that depend upon having that knowledge. But if your soldiers don't have the knowledge to back up the oaths that they've made, they are at a disadvantage.
And they might be more likely to just follow blindly without questioning.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that's a larger issue than your educated masses. You know what I mean?
Jamie and Claire cuddle, and he tells her, "Nothing will harm you while there is breath in my body."
Leanne, say that again. Do it.
No.
You're going to say it like that. You got to say it over and over again.
Leanne F. Right.
Liar. I hate you.
Jamie is the main POV in this chapter. I always appreciate a chance to experience this and hear his thoughts. Jamie is awake and thinking about his loved ones and the larger community in which they live. He embodies the watchfire of the chapter title as he finds some much needed time to ponder the events of the day and the difficulties they are likely to face in the near future as passions flare over politics. He has been running around all day long, putting out various fires for others who need him to settle disputes, provide counsel, and keep the peace. All of this while he strives to get his grandchildren christened and his daughter married, despite the government officials refusing to allow the priest to perform his duties. I like the quiet conversation Jamie has with Claire in the darkness about the breaking down of community that they are witnessing. Both sides are wrong, the rioters for their unleashed violence and the people betraying the rioters to the authorities. The world is complicated and no one is right, but events can take on a momentum impossible to stop as an individual gets subsumed by the mob, and what might be unthinkable alone becomes doable as an impassioned group. And in the end, the entire community will suffer the consequences. Now, Jamie is wise enough to know their future is uncertain, but he will face what lies ahead and do what he must. Keeping his loved ones safe is, as always, his highest priority. Now, I'm going to leave the smexy Jamie thoughts to you, Ginger and Shimmer. But I did want to note that we end this longest day ever in much the way we began it, in the tent with the Frasers cuddling. And now it's Jamie's turn to ponder some sexy times with Claire. The book and the day began with Claire nestled in the tent with Jamie as she contemplated some sexy times. The day and events intercede, though, and the Frasers get no satisfaction.
The book. Brutal.
Claire falls asleep while Jamie continues to watch, still all aflame. Quote, Jamie lay stiff and wide awake long after the watchfire had been quenched by the rain. Unquote.
And that was chapter 17. Join us next time when we will be beginning part two of The Fiery Cross, entitled The Chieftain's Call, and chapter 18, which is entitled No Place Like Home. What are we doing next week, Ginger?
So we are looking forward to continuing our read-along of The Fiery Cross, but it won't be next week.
And why will that? Why is that?
For the next few weeks, we will be partaking of Pod Abroad 2019.
Woohoo! I'm not packed yet. Are you packed? It's okay. I'll get there. I actually got my suitcase out today and I put like two things in it. Nothing monumental. And I have way more things to pack, but I don't have enough clothes to be able to just pack them willy-nilly. I need to do some laundry and live for the rest of the week before I can start packing. So I'm getting excited, but it's still just far enough that I can pretend it's not happening yet. Thoughts?
No, there's a lot to do. I have a lot to do besides packing between now and when we leave. Yes.
All right. Well, if you would like to join us to continue the conversation, you can go to www.outlanderpod.com/groups and join our Facebook group where we talk about all kinds of things, not just the book, but we, you know, kind of like our show, talk about all things Outlander.
And if you want to be part of our read-along, you can go to outlanderpod.com/fierycross and choose a chapter from those available, or more than one chapter, and send us in your comments. So thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode, which will come to you from... Well, our next official episode will be back.
That's not a thing.
But that is in a few weeks. So... until we meet again, have a wonderful everything, rest of spring, rest of April, and we will be back soon.
We look forward to our next episode. You didn't say it.
Okay, I'll use yours.
Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @outlanderpod.